Chapter 16, The Guilt Button. Guilty parents tend to place far more importance on their children's needs than on their own. When asked, they usually can't tell you what their own needs are. They feel guilty if they do and guilty if they don't. Often they were taught in childhood that the needs of the adults in their lives were more important than their own and were left feeling responsible for meeting those needs. Guilt was a useful motivator for teaching that responsibility. Guilty parents are not very good at taking care of themselves, honoring their own needs, and creating appropriate boundaries because their focus is on what they haven't done right. Many positive moments with a child are completely ignored because the guilt over just one thing will be exaggerated. And when guilty parents decide they've come up short, their fuse is short, too. Guilt is often used as an excuse for the parent's behavior. If a parent fears that she has done something wrong, feeling guilty often gives her permission. If I feel guilty, I can't be blamed, when she either can't or won't rectify the situation. Finding other compensations, like presents, trips, or sweets, offers the parent the illusion of making the child happy, so the parent can be relieved of guilt, temporarily. The guilty parent is always wishing, "If only I were a better parent." Children of the guilty parent often feel guilty and anxious themselves, sometimes acting out when they feel responsible for the guilt that drives their parent. Children who push their parents' guilt button are telling them to get a life and get on with what's important now, instead of stewing over what could or should have been. Separation is a horrible, destructive thing. Rachel and Greg, aged 8. How could a decent mother drop her child off with someone she barely knew? Rachel was amazed that tears still came when she talked about putting Gregory in daycare almost 8 years ago when he was 3 months old. I don't think I'll ever get over it. I still feel so guilty about it. I know I messed him up. I was a terrible mother. On the contrary, Rachel is a terrific mother. She has worked hard learning about temperament in order to understand Greg's intense nature and to gain neutrality in handling the years of his daily tantrums. She continues to take parenting classes, but is still convinced that the intensity of his tantrums were due to those first few years in daycare. I'm sure I harmed him by leaving him. His struggles wouldn't have been so bad if I had stayed with him. I did a terrible disservice to him. I'm sure we could have made ends meet, but I trusted my husband's judgment that we needed more money. Oh, I'm still angry at him about it. How did the guilt affect your life during that time? I asked. I never stopped. I tried to keep everyone happy all the time. I just kept pleasing everybody. I spent every minute with the kids and did the laundry and all the housework after 10 at night. I was just exhausted. I took care of all my husband's emotional needs, but I wasn't taking care of myself at all. So I got really sick. I got a terrible case of the flu that kept me home for weeks. I was worn out for a couple of months. That was what stopped me. It gave me the excuse to quit working. Besides, the cost of 2 kids in daycare was practically what I was making anyway. Rachel left work after Greg had been in daycare for 3.5 years. Although the stress lessened, Rachel missed her work. They were like my family, she said, and I loved my work, but I just couldn't take the guilt anymore. But it sounds as though the guilt is still with you, I noted. Another class member piped up. That was almost 5 years ago, Rachel. You're doing a great job now. You've got 2 great kids. Why are you still so upset about it? I just feel that I did permanent damage to him. He's always been such a homebody, and separating is so hard for him. That's it, I think. Separation is my biggest issue. Rachel began tearing up again. What is it about separation, Rachel? I asked. I was brought up to believe that separation is like death, she answered. Everyone was startled by her response. My mother is a total narcissist with a borderline personality. She's never seen life from anyone's perspective other than her own. She's constantly off to the hospital with some new made-up disease or condition. She's always been jealous of anything good that has ever happened to me, and has basically made life miserable for everyone around her. My father has committed his life to taking care of her purely because of his marriage vows, Rachel continued. He can't take her either, but would never leave her. I was always his way out. He created this triangle between the three of us. I had to be there. I felt guilty if I went out for a night in high school. My brothers got to do whatever they wanted, but when I told my father I wanted to go to college, he offered to buy me a car and give me money if I would stay home. He dreaded being alone with my mother. I actually made it to college, but I think I hurt him very much. I feel so guilty about the life I left him with. He was shocked when I didn't move back home after college. So what did you learn about yourself growing up in this triangle? I asked. You do not separate from someone you love. I got that message loud and clear from both my parents. My father couldn't separate from my mother, even though he desperately wanted to, and I couldn't separate from either of them because it was seen as this huge betrayal. Doing something for myself is the hardest thing in the world. So you got left with all the guilt. Bingo, Rachel said emphatically. So when you separated yourself from Greg by going back to work, what did that tell you? I asked. That I was about the worst person in the world. Like I said, separation meant death, the end. It was the worst thing you could do. Separating from someone you love is a betrayal. It's the ultimate in selfishness. I was never allowed to be selfish. My job was to always keep Mom happy at all costs, and to keep Dad from having to deal with her by himself. Do you think you have to keep Greg happy at all costs? I asked. Rachel looked pensive. I wonder if you couldn't deal with the death-betrayal aspect of what you had done to your father and to Greg, and so you turned it into severe guilt to punish yourself. That self-punishment somehow allowed you to live with it. What would it feel like for you to say that you did what felt right, what you needed to do? It would feel selfish. It would be admitting that I was a bad girl, Rachel said. So is the guilt your punishment for being that bad girl? I asked. Yeah, I guess so. I was a bad girl for leaving my father to deal with my mother and for leaving Greg in daycare to deal with all those people. Oh, it still makes me feel so bad, Rachel said, shaking her head. What's the risk in stopping the punishment? What do you get out of still feeling guilty? I asked. Rachel thought for a moment and then said, I looked at Greg in the car the other day, and I was enjoying his company so much. I thought, how dare I not take advantage of him when he was little? He's this gentle soul. How could I have left him alone to fend for himself? I operate most of my life out of anxiety. It feels like the safety net, so I don't have to deal with what's really going on. If I didn't feel guilty, I would be a bad mother. How could a good mother leave her 3-month-old and feel good about it? Rachel had created a standard for herself that said good mothers do not separate from their children. But to get her family's needs met, she had to separate, so as not to feel like a supremely selfish person who deserves to die. She felt self-deprecating guilt instead. That way she could live with herself. Even though you needed the money and the support from work, you couldn't feel good about it because it would have meant breaking from the family, both families. People who love each other don't separate is the belief you grew up with. It translated directly to your standard. Since you couldn't live up to your standard, you compensated by putting yourself down with guilt. Your assumptions, I harmed him, I did a disservice to him, and I made him have intense tantrums, feed your punishing guilt. If you didn't feel guilty, you would be a selfish person in your eyes. Too bad to live with yourself. I asked Rachel to think about how accurate it was that she had indeed damaged her son and that his tantrums were due to his 3 years in daycare. I know it's not entirely accurate, and I know how much I needed those days with other adults. They gave me the support I didn't have, and I loved my work, she said again. I think the guilt has nothing to do with working, only with separation. The guilt goes back to your childhood wound, which is tapped every time you separate. Well, I'm already freaking out about him going off to college. I don't see how I'm going to be able to stand that, Rachel added. What do you get from the guilt? I asked again. A lot of anxiety, she said with a laugh. Don't you also get to be a virtuous person? I asked. When you express your guilt, don't you get to have people say, oh, Rachel, you shouldn't feel guilty about that? You get to have people focus on you and feel sorry for you. Rachel looked embarrassed. And isn't that what you would have loved from your parents? Oh, my goodness. So I'm setting this all up to get what I wanted from my parents all along? Wow, that's amazing. So if I let that go, I wonder if I could lose the guilt, Rachel pondered. Well, it's worth a try, I said. Each time you feel that guilt, do some self-talk connecting the guilt to your parents, not to work or Greg, and see what happens. The last week, Rachel came in with her new standard. Separation allows for independence and growth. It's a hard one, and I don't entirely believe it yet, but I know now that my guilt protected me when I thought I had betrayed my parents and didn't deserve to live. That's ridiculous. So I keep remembering that my guilt was from then, and it's not about Greg. It helps me see that it is true, that he really is fine, and occasionally I get that I'm fine, too. Rachel continues battling her guilt. It often pops up after she's dropped Greg off at school or puts him on the school bus. When she's able to talk herself through it, the anxiety is less, and she is through it sooner. How can I make it up to her? David and Callie, age 10. Callie's a shopaholic, David complained as the group was discussing what their children do to push their buttons. Everywhere we go, she says, I have to have that, Daddy, please. It drives me nuts. Does she get it? Another group member asked. David looked a bit sheepish and said, yeah, mostly. But we're really trying to cut back. Every time we say no, she throws a fit right there in the store. What are you supposed to do? I mean, the girl has everything she could possibly want. She's even got one of those American Girl dolls that cost $100. You'd think she'd be satisfied. I'm working my butt off to keep her in goods. What motivates you to buy her the things she wants? I asked. So she'll get off my back, he said with a laugh. I don't know, actually. She spends a lot of time playing by herself, so she needs things to play with. There aren't a lot of kids in the neighborhood, and she's an only child. Does that bother you? I asked. What, that she's an only child? I don't know. I guess so. It makes me sad when I see her playing alone. She can't be having any fun. I mean, we didn't give her a sibling. Did you have siblings? I asked. Yeah, I had two brothers. I didn't have much to do with my younger brother, but my older brother and I were very close. We did a lot together, you know, sports, drinking beer, listening to Jimi Hendrix, stuff like that. And we spent hours commiserating about our parents. Callie won't have anyone to offload her frustrations on. We try to have a good relationship with her so she can offload on us, but, you know, it's not the same. Why did you decide to have only one child then? Another person in the group asked. Purely selfish reasons. We weren't even going to have one, but we somehow got talked into it by our friends. We really liked to travel and thought more than one would make it prohibitive. Callie has more frequent flyer miles than most adults. I'm really afraid it's going to backfire on us one day. She'll be in therapy complaining that her parents didn't give her a sibling. Why are you so sure she wants a sibling? A mother in the group asked. I'm an only child, and I wouldn't want it any other way. Maybe you're assuming she's going to be miserable because you would have been without your brother. I just went off in my own little world and loved it. That's really good to hear, David said. She did say to my wife about a year ago that she wished she had a sister. It's funny, when I ask her, she evades the question. She gives me this patronizing look and says, "It's okay, Daddy." That makes me feel worse. I've told her that I was sorry about the whole thing, but she doesn't respond. It sounds to me like you want her permission to let you off the hook for something she may not even care about, I suggested. Why do you need to be let off the hook? David continued talking about how much he thought she was missing out on, and then it finally came out. We actually did have another child before Callie, who died at birth. We named her and had a memorial service for her and everything. It was pretty heavy. Do you think it's okay to tell Callie that we did have another child? Would that be enough to appease her, do you think, to let her know that we did try? What strikes me is that you think you need an excuse for her being an only child, I said. Oh, I'm making assumptions again, aren't I? Since you had already decided to have only one child, would you have had Callie if the baby had lived, I asked? No, was David's immediate response. I wonder if your guilt is more about the fact that Callie wouldn't even be here if the baby had lived. Do you want to talk a little more about the baby? I asked. David looked uncomfortable, but said, well, maybe I should. We did decide at first that that was our one shot at it, that we wouldn't have another. We were pretty depressed for a long time. It was really hard. But time helped, and we decided that we really wanted a child. We had gotten psyched for one, and now we didn't have any. It was a scary pregnancy, not knowing what would happen. But then Callie arrived and has been a handful ever since. She definitely makes up for two. Do you think you're compensating for the loss of the first child by giving Callie everything she wants? Oh, maybe that's it. It certainly feels like compensating. David continued to tell us that he had made a decision to be self-employed so that Callie wouldn't be alone or have to be put in daycare. His wife works with him. But because of that, his options were limited, and he works at something he doesn't enjoy. He has to work long, exhausting hours to make travel affordable, and now feels guilty about the fact that Callie has to play alone while they're in their home office. I feel chained to this damn business, but I'm starting to cut back. I asked how Callie does playing alone. He described her wild imagination and her closeness with their dog and cat. So it sounds to me like Callie's doing fine, I offered. Perhaps you have to hang on to the guilt over the fact that Callie wouldn't be here had your first not died. And that guilt continues to be fed by your assumptions that Callie's not getting what you had when you were a boy. If she does wish for a sibling, which could have been a momentary desire, it could be the result of your projection. You have expressed to her real concerns and apologies. She must think that there's something important she's missing out on. You've been breaking your back to make it okay for her. But what you're really doing is trying to make it okay for you to have made the decisions you did. Through the classwork, David realized that the standard that fueled his remorseful guilt was children are better off with siblings, which has led to his assumption, I have to make it up to Callie for not giving her a sibling. David realized that he had transferred his own experience onto Callie and had decided what she would want. His agenda then left him with the remorse over not giving it to her, as well as his guilt over the baby who died. He's attempted to assuage his guilt by working at home and buying Callie whatever she wanted. The result, however, is a demanding shopaholic. More reasons to feed David's guilt. We worked on David taking responsibility for the decisions he and his wife made to have one child in order to travel and live an affordable life. His perception that their decisions were based on selfish motivation kept him steeped in the guilt that was creating the problem he needed to address, an entitled child who was learning to take advantage of his guilt. I asked David if he could find a way to look more holistically at their decisions. He came into class one evening and said, I guess I've been asking Callie to validate my decisions by apologizing to her for not providing a sibling, hoping she would say that she didn't even want one. So now I have to bite the bullet and accept the fact that this is what we wanted, and she has to live with it. As you've heard right here in the group, some people thrive on being an only child, I pointed out. David rewrote his standard to say, we made decisions that felt right for us. Children adapt to the world they experience, which makes them who they are. By the last class, he reported that their commitment to saying no to Callie over things she wanted was beginning to get little or no negative reaction from her. And when she did balk, I could say, not this time, without feeling drenched in guilt. It didn't bother me so much that she was unhappy about it, David said, pleased with himself. I think the guilt is beginning to break up. If only I could do something. Kristen, Nellie, 5, and Will, 18 months. I have a bright, beautiful 5-year-old girl who has completely stopped talking to me. Kristen announced this fact as blithely as if her daughter had stopped eating Cheerios. Nellie doesn't answer when I speak to her. She doesn't respond when I make requests. She ignores me when I try to discipline her. I find myself yelling at her just to get her to acknowledge me. I've screamed things like, you little pain in the ass! I grab her, I push her, sometimes I just want to smack her. Nothing has ever made me so mad in my entire life. Kristen stopped, took a deep breath, then continued. After it's over, I feel such guilt that I can hardly get through the day. I am literally heartsick. Sometimes I just sit and stare out the window. I can't even do my job. I wait and I watch the clock, counting the hours and minutes until I can pick her up from school to see if everything's okay, to see if I've really done it this time, if I've ruined her for good. I rush to school, filled with anxiety, call to her, and search for some clue that I've been forgiven or that perhaps this time it wasn't so bad. Often she'll look toward me, but just past me, not making eye contact. Some days she acts like everything's fine. Either way, I feel so guilty. Then Kristen began to describe Nellie's aggression and mistreatment of her little brother, Will. She hates him. She won't ever let him play with her. She pushes him away or swats him and hurts him. I just can't stand it. I suffered through a second pregnancy to give her someone to make her life journey with, someone who will be there for her after we're gone. It kills me to hear her say she hates him. Can't you see how their relationship is your agenda, not hers? I asked. You're asking her to be happy about what you want her to want. It's not her responsibility to take care of your hopes and dreams. But why wouldn't she want to have a brother, someone to play with? Well, she may eventually, but right now he's usurping her position in the family, and she's mad about it. She has to share you now, and she used to have you all to herself, I said. So when you get angry at her for her behavior toward him, she hears that she's not acceptable to you, but he is. Her behavior reflects how she feels when she hears that. So that's why she wouldn't wipe his nose in the car the other day? I handed her a Kleenex and asked her to, and she flat out refused. I got so mad at her. Yeah, I guess I'm expecting her to want to help him. Exactly, I said. Why is it so important to you that they have each other? Who did you have? My younger sister, Kristen said quietly. She began a tale of a very hard childhood. My sister and I were very different, but we had this alliance that helped us survive our miserable family. My father was a good-for-nothing alcoholic, and my mother was useless in shielding us from his rages. We were incredibly poor. We never seemed to have enough heat. We wore our coats in the house and our clothes to bed. We often didn't have enough food in the house. My sister and I have a solidarity, having suffered through the same childhood, a kind of we're-in-this-together bond. There isn't anything we wouldn't do for each other. I was the strong one, and she was the weaker. I spoke for her and protected her against my father. He never hit us, but he swore at us. That's why I use such horrible language when I get mad. It's in my database. So you want Nellie and Will to have what you and your sister had. But you and your sister were the victims of a circumstance that Nellie and Will don't share. They have no need to bond against you and your husband. Kristen was quiet for a moment. Then she described how the shame she felt as a child still haunts her, even though she has created a professional life to mask it as much as possible. It's like this shadow that's always following right behind me, she said. No matter how hard I try, I can't seem to get away from it. And when I'm in front of people making a presentation at work, I feel like such a fake. Like any second they're going to find out who I really am. And who is that? I asked. This unlovable, no-good failure. When I'm yelling at Nell for being mean to Will, I'm just passing on what was done to me. I'm horrified at how I've screwed her up with my garbage. Did you feel guilty as a child? I asked. Did I ever? Kristen exclaimed. My father was a professional musician and demanded that I play the same instrument that he did. I never liked it because it wasn't my choice, so I always felt riddled with guilt that I let him down, let down his belief and hope in me. Plus, I was always guilty about how miserable my parents were. They always told me their financial woes. My childhood mantra was, if only I could do something. I suggested to Kristen, your shame gets tapped each time Nellie pushes your button, and so you feel ineffectual. When that wound is poked, you react by screaming at Nellie to get her to stop poking. But you need to let the poking in and feel the pain to become aware of how your past is creating the gap between you two. When she pokes, ask yourself what the poking is trying to tell you. We're so much alike, Kristen said. It's like we're twins, and I'm so afraid I'm treating her like my father treated me. I hear him coming out of my mouth. No wonder you want Nellie to take care of Will. That's the role you played and you expected of your older and stronger child. You're projecting your role onto her and resenting her for not filling it, and it's only based on fear. When I asked Kristen what her expectations for her children were, she spoke more about the responsibility she and her sister felt for one another. We were the parents for each other that we never had. We were each other's safety zone. When we got it written into a standard, it said, "My children should have unconditional, absolute, sincere, and lifelong commitment to each other." "Whoa, that's a pretty tall order for two little kids," I said. "Quite a setup for failure." Thinking she could make her standard work, Kristen demanded that Nellie do things for Will. Nellie most likely heard her mother's requests across the gap to mean that Will was more important than she was and resented him for it. "What do you think the guilt protects you from?" I asked. "If you didn't feel guilty about your reactions to Nellie, what would that mean?" "Well, it would mean that I meant it all, that I behaved consciously, that it was thought out and acceptable. To me, the guilt means that I have the desire to be a better parent." I pointed out that Kristen's resentment of Nellie directly led to Nellie's resentment of Will. But the good news was that her resentful guilt was motivating her instead of immobilizing her. We discussed ways in which Kristen might regain connection with Nellie. After a few weeks, experiencing both immediate progress and disappointing regression, Kristen came in declaring a breakthrough. I told Nellie the story of her birth and how my secret wish had been for her to be a little girl. She looked at me like she couldn't believe what she was hearing. I told her how much I understood, how annoying Will can be, and how I wish at times that it were just us again. She agreed, fully expressing her loathing for him, how much she hates him and wishes he were dead. I had to bite my tongue to keep from telling her not to say things like that. I was sure this was just making it worse, but finally she said to me unprompted, "Mommy, it's just that I wasn't expecting a boy." Everything started to change after that. Almost all their fighting stopped. She and I are like best friends again. I feel such joy at rediscovering who she is. "But here's the best part," she continued. One day they were at a friend's house, and the friend's little brother hit Will in the face. Will cried, and Nellie ran to him, screaming, circling his body with her arms. When the friend's mother got to them, Nell said, "He was hurting my brother. No one can hurt my brother." When we talked about it later, she said, "I was protecting him. He was trying to hurt my brother." A week later, she announced to me that she's in love with Will. In allowing Nellie to express her anger toward her brother, Kristen showed her acceptance of Nellie, feelings and all. Nellie knew she was okay and no longer felt threatened by Will. She was free to accept him. Once Kristen made the connection between her past shame and her reactions toward Nellie, she could give Nellie what was never given to her. Her new standard declares simply, all family members are to respect one another. The demands for commitment are gone. The chances of it happening are now greater than ever.